This episode of the show is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free 30-day trial and free audiobook of your choosing by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 different titles, such as Chris Jericho's latest book, No is a Four-Letter Word. It's even narrated by the man himself. Audiobooks are perfect for the person on the move. Believe me, they're great. Maybe you want a mystery novel or a biography of someone you love. Audible has it all. Plus, it's free to try. If you don't like it, which would be weird, cancel and keep your free audiobook that you downloaded forever. Go try it now at audibletrial.com/missspots. Audible. Listening is the new reading.
Mike, if I've learned one thing this week in the world of professional wrestling, it would be that Jim Ross hates a back rake almost as much as I hate the brand warfare concept of Survivor Series.
This and much more talk about the pet peeves of Jim Ross coming up on the Miss Spots podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a free event.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
All right.
Does Jim Ross have a lot of pet peeves?
He does.
He's a cranky old man, and I don't know why. I don't hate it. I love it.
He hates when Ortiz bites the ropes. He hates probably Texas, the university, maybe not so much the state, considering he's an Oklahoma guy.
Yeah. He's just so crotchety, and the things that he tends to get really upset about, and sometimes the things he gets upset about, I also agree with 100%. And it's like 50% of the time he's right, but probably shouldn't say it on air. And the other 50%, he's making very astute observations about a professional wrestling match that makes perfect sense for the context of it. So maybe that's why I give him a pass on some of the more cranky, annoying things, is because of all the great stuff he still adds.
Thinking about it, most of the cranky stuff I feel like is always directed towards Santana and Ortiz.
That's true.
Coincidence?
The two we just mentioned.
Yeah. So we're almost past the worst time of the year, Survivor Series. When everyone puts all their differences behind them just for the sake of bragging rights to be able to say that they have the superior brand. And I've seen a lot of people complaining about how this is hurting NXT this year with the buildup towards War Games, and people complaining about War Games now becoming one of those gimmicky pay-per-views like Hell in a Cell and TLC and all of that, to where they have to just shoehorn matches into it. Like the first War Games that they brought back, like it all made sense. And then you had some just shoehorn stuff last year. And then this year, this makeshift team of people who have apparently been wronged by the Undisputed Era, all getting thrown in there, the women, a mishmash of them, which by the way, why hasn't Shayna Baszler picked her BFFs to be on her team?
I don't know. I'm having a real hard time with both the things you mentioned are just so strikingly bad and incoherent for good storylines. The fact that you have to, it's War Games time, so you got to have War Games matches, and the nonsensical aspects of the brand warfare. But put those two things together, we're going to have War Games, which is supposed to be brutal and taxing and supposed to change careers. And then they're just going to go, the same people, and fight the next night?
Practically, yeah.
That is terrible. Terrible. The classic, you know, you're giving away the business. You're exposing the business. You're doing such damage to the credibility of your wrestlers, to the credibility of your storylines, to the believability of your product. I really, really hated last week that Jon Moxley was involved in that match with Kenny Omega and competed on AEW 3-4 days later. I hated that.
Yeah.
It is so bad to do something like that, and it's something that AEW should be better than. And WWE are going to one-up that by putting people in a War Games match and have them compete the next night in what is supposed to be, which is arguably, by WWE standards, more important of a match. I mean, we all know it's not.
Yeah.
But it, for their promotion, it is. The WWE put together a draft that was supposed to separate the brands completely, and it was all going to be nice and clean weeks before Survivor Series, when they knew they were going to blow the whole thing up and set War Games up, knowing that they were going to do. It's just the lack of planning and foresight is stunning. And there's a reason why I have not watched WWE programming in over two weeks. I just won't watch this. It's not, even the good things that I'm reading about, some good matches here or there, I won't be able to get over it. I won't be able to enjoy any part of the product when the entire scope of the company is so misguided right now.
Yeah. And this is a paint-by-numbers scenario every single year. You have people who don't like each other coming together against their better judgment to form some teams that have been picked by whom? I don't know. And then they end up having matches against one another in the build-up here because, you know, that's what you want your people on your team to do, fight each other instead of work as a team, just so that they can be jumped by other teams. And NXT is just a copy and paste group added into the shenanigans of this all. And add on top of it the fact that, as you said, we have at least five people who will be taking part in War Games matches the night before, supposedly a brutal match, who will then have matches the following night. All four members of the Undisputed Era and Shayna Baszler are already definitively booked in matches at Survivor Series. It's very likely that other people in the men's and women's War Games matches could be booked because we still have, at the point of this recording, TBAs on the Team NXTs for the 5-on-5 matches, or the 5-on-5-on-5 matches. Sorry, forgot a 5. And it's, if NXT wins any of those matches, I'm going to call bullshit, because they shouldn't. They absolutely shouldn't. And if they actually do book this right and have the NXT guys losing matches because they got the shit kicked out of them in a match the night before, then kudos to them. Good on them for doing that. But this is just this tried and not so true situation for WWE. Every single year, it is the same stuff. Over and over for nothing in the end.
And also, I just have to ask, how is a 3-team 15-person elimination match, how is that going to, how are those going to be good matches?
No idea.
Do you want to talk about convoluted? I mean, it's just so much, and it's so dumb. And the thing that you just mentioned that I didn't mention, you've got, like you said, guys fighting that are on the same team on Raw for no reason. Why? Why would anyone book this? What's the point of any of this? And the answer is, of course, there is no point. To fill up TV time, and that's it. So, no, I've been reading the results of SmackDown and Raw again this week, and I said, there's nothing here for me. I didn't watch the shows. And once again, life is better because of it. Do you have anything? We just talked at length about the nonsense that is Survivor Series and some of the stupid aspects that we are keeping us turned off. Is there anything? Because I'm sure you watched Raw this week.
I did. I fell asleep right before the main event.
Is there anything else you want to mention about WWE programming right now?
I hate you. Not you.
Me?
WWE. Oh. It just, like, I'm, so much of this just makes no sense. And you know what? Like, any person who's listening to this has the right to tell me, then just don't watch. If it's not for you, don't watch. And you're absolutely right. I don't know why I don't. Maybe I'm a sucker for a punishment. Kevin has at least decided I'm not going to watch. I've decided that with SmackDown, even though last Friday I stayed home and still decided not to watch SmackDown. It's just, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. Listen, in regards to keeping Raw being this consistent thing in my life. I look at this stupid fucking storyline with Bob Lash, Rusev, and Lana, and all I can think is if you were to go to a steakhouse, a wonderful, like, high-end steakhouse, and order a porterhouse, like, medium rare, it's supposed to be delicious, and then they just bring you shit on a plate and just tell you, but no, you'll like this, try it. No, that's not what I want. Come on, just do it. You'll like it. That's what I feel like when they are continuing to just try to throw this storyline down all of our throats. It's a collective dud. No, if you find me a person who likes this, I will say they're a robot.
Dude, it's consistently getting the most YouTube views every single week, and they believe that this is an eye-catching angle. It's certainly not for us. And it's one of the other things that has kept me turned off to the product. And listen, my family is not a Nielsen family. I don't even know how the ratings work these days. But I don't think me turning off the TV is going to matter one lick. But the ratings still suck.
Yeah.
They keep doing really, really bad numbers. And the numbers tail off even more as the night goes on. And some people believe that the NXT aspect of this invasion has really saved this year, and I'm sure it's exciting to see these guys show up on Raw and SmackDown, but just peek one level below that surface and you just find an absolute mess.
Yeah.
I think less talked about WWE, the better. AEW Dynamite. I found this show, you know...
I thought this was a rebound from last week. It wasn't perfect, but yeah, I thought that this was a good show.
I always read What Culture's ups and downs from every week of, or every episode of wrestling TV. They gave AEW show last week somewhere like 12 ups and 0 downs. And said it was probably the best week of television they've ever done. And you and I were both not that pleased with it. We thought it was good, but definitely not their best effort. So it's always interesting to see. And I tend to agree very often with What Culture and their criticisms of the shows and the things that they like. So I was a little bit shocked by this.
Yeah.
I thought this week was fine. There was some good wrestling action, but in my best case scenario, I always look at AEW as being more realistic and more well thought out and better planned. And I kind of want this all. I just kind of assume that when I see a battle royal, I'm not going to see someone we forgot about that's hiding on the outside of the ring that can come back in and be part of the match again. I just assume we're not going to have someone like Sean Spears able to eliminate somebody that's in the match when he's not in the match. Those are two things in a battle royal that I despise. They are idiotic.
It makes no sense. If Joey Janela is on the top rope and Sean Spears hits him with a chair and he goes out to the floor, they should say, okay, you're still in the match. You weren't eliminated by someone in this match. It would make no sense that you can be eliminated by someone not in the match. That's stupid. The WWE has done it for years because they don't know how to tell good stories and they're lazy as shit. Now, Sean Spears hits Joey Janela with a chair. You can't really disqualify anybody and somebody else eliminates him. Okay, I'll give you that one.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a terrible trope that I expect better from with AEW. And the whole MJF thing being on the outside, everyone knew he was just involved in the whole thing. He wasn't forgotten. We knew we were going to get this as it was happening. And there should be a rule in Battle Royals. If you are on the outs, if you don't go over the top rope, if you go through the middle rope or under the bottom rope, and you are on the outside for more than 10 seconds, you should be eliminated.
Yes.
Why is that not a thing? AEW, do this better. You have the opportunity to not be WWE and book these lazy, awful, repetitive, faux wrestling entertainment tropes. And it pisses me off to high heaven when they do it.
And then we also had Billy Gunn in this match. And he did a fucking big man spot where everyone ganged up on him and he pushed them all away. Like 8 to 10 people. That might be slight hyperbole, but like it was around 8 people that were beating him down and he just pushed them away like he's fucking Braun Strowman or Kane or someone, or Goldberg, Lesnar. Billy Gunn.
Well, did you look at him in the ring? He was by far the biggest human being in there.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, and it goes to show you how kind of smaller size the roster is in AEW. He was towering over everybody. And
man,
he
the orange juice in Indianapolis must have something to it.
And he is in incredible shape.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't look at his face.
Don't get me wrong there.
If you look at, he looks like he's in the middle of his WWE run.
Yeah.
I mean, I was very impressed by that. I when he came in, I was like, God damn it. They're going to do this where he dominates the entire match because he's a WWE. They should not have done all that.
Yeah.
I liked him as a kind of surprise entrant. I thought it could be fun, but it seems a little bit pandery. It seems like something that TNA would do.
Yeah.
Is to have a WWE guy come in and get a big pop and this, that, and the other. He didn't win. He wasn't even around near the end of the match. That's a good aspect of it. So maybe it's a little bit of a good and up and a down kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think the two guys who you would imagine would be at the end were the ones at the end. I mean, obviously, big things are planned for both Hangman and MJF. That made sense. Also, man, MJF just getting more and more heel heat by the interaction he had with a fan on the outside coming into the ring and then eliminating crowd favorite Orange Cassidy. That'll make you a big time heel.
Yeah, the guys that were there, the guys that won, so to speak, the last two, that was perfect. I like the fact that they're fighting for an actual diamond ring.
Yeah.
Is that in response to the guys in WWE fighting for the brass ring? And they're like, oh no, you're going to give you an actual diamond ring and you're going to seize it. I guess it's interesting. I'm not buying it yet. I'm kind of wondering why they're, I guess though, it's a actual prize.
It has this almost old NWA type of feel to it. It's like, you would have some maybe little local tournament with some guys for that they would win like $10,000 or something like that.
I think I would like it more if it was $10,000. I really do. I think a bonus would be good, but I guess an actual expensive item is okay. And it's a little bit different.
They can always sell it.
Yeah. It's a little bit different. There's a lot to chew on in a situation like that. The other thing that I'm just running into every week, and I'm certainly not the only one, is how do these rankings work? I love rankings. I love that we're hearing about the number four guys fighting the number five guy. I think this is exactly what we've always wanted.
Yeah.
Is we want to hear this kind of stuff. But how are these rankings working? Because if you look at them, they don't make any sense. How do people with pretty poor win-loss records, how are they above guys with better win-loss records? Why are guys ranked number three when they had three matches compared to another guy who has seven matches? What's the rhyme or reason? How is it weighted? And
yeah, how why are Santana they not trying? And Ortiz not the top ones? Because they, like, why are they not number one? They have not lost a match.
Well, until today.
Yes.
But yeah, but is it because they only had two matches? I want, if you're going to give me this, give me a reason for it. Give me an explanation. And if that explanation is there's a scientific formula that goes into quality of wins, it can even be bullshit. And I'll give you a little bit of credit for it. It shouldn't be bullshit. You should be planning ahead. And if you're going to do this, you've made your life harder. If you're going to really go by wins and losses matter, and these rankings are real things, you've just complicated your business model. And yeah, you made that decision. So I say stick with it. Have some foresight. And book even your Dynamite shows 5 weeks in advance, if that's what you got to do.
At least they do it for the most part a week in advance, which is more than WWE can say for their main two shows.
I'm saying they have to have a pragmatic thought of if Santana and Ortiz are here and they want them to get to here, they have to book them in several matches in a row and know the outcomes of each one and who they're going to fight, because each win they have is going to affect somebody else. It's really, really tough to do this.
Yeah.
But you've put yourself in there and you've advertised yourself like that. So go ahead and do it. And at the very least, give us some kind of in-story bullshit, but somewhat logical or somewhat believable reason why these rankings are the way they are. Because we also now once again, we have a guy fighting and getting a world title shot next week who isn't even a singles wrestler.
Yeah.
And where's the rankings? Why is he getting a title shot if he's not one through five in the rankings? This needs explanation.
I feel like there was some explanation here, and this was Jericho's own fragile ego. He's the one who booked it.
But
against
why
himself.
Why can Jericho book matches?
That is a trope in wrestling that has never quite gone away, to where champions seem to be able to just book their own matches. Well, wrestlers just being able to book their own matches.
That just shouldn't happen. That shouldn't happen. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
You can't book these kind of hotshot things that may or may not be good for the company, and also try to have this air of believability and number one contendership and rankings. You just can't have them both. And I'm just, listen, was that interaction and promo fun? I thought
yes,
it was.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed it.
It was silly, but it was well done and it was still engaging. I thought that was a really good promo, but the things around it I thought were problematic. But I also feel like there's a lot of storyline convergence right now over the last couple of weeks in AEW. There's a lot of, you know, Lucha Brothers are feuding with these guys, but also feuding with these guys. And these guys are the inner circle.
That's
feuding
been happening
with these
since
guys.
Day one.
Yeah, it's just there's a lot going on there. And it's a little bit confusing and kind of seeing what's going on and what's going to happen next. And we don't have to be predicting everything 6 weeks out and know exactly who's going to challenge for the next titles here. But I think a little more some clean delineation lines would be helpful for me.
Yeah, it absolutely would. I mean, that's been one of my biggest criticisms is I hate how Young Bucks are involved with these people, but also involved with these people. The rest of the elite, like, they're all so somewhat helping one another, but all have their own little individual things, sometimes with one or multiple people. It's like, some of it makes sense and some of it doesn't. Some of it just seems like, wow, where did this come from? I like that they're going back to, like, Kenny Omega going like, you know what? I pinpoint where my problem was, and that was when I lost to you, Pac. So I'm coming back for you. I dig that. And I dig the forethought going into his character, trying to figure out, where did I go wrong? And believing that it was that particular match and wanting to go back and rectify that to try to get himself back on track. I think that that's such a simple storyline that I wouldn't have thought of. And it makes so much sense in the direction of Kenny Omega's character.
Yeah, I like that. I did think that was good. And there was some good action in this episode. The opening match was a banger.
Yeah.
But Mike, did you feel like me when I saw this match announced? I went, wow, this is really cool. And then I said, well, why are these guys fighting? Why are two tag guys getting in a singles match? What prompted this? What's the impetus of it? And I thought, you know how they could have fixed this? It's, in my opinion, not that it necessarily needs to be fixed, but give me some reason. Nick Jackson runs into Rey Fénix after his brother gets powerbombed through a stage, and we have a little vignette from the previous week where, you know, the Lucha Brothers kind of gave them shit about it.
Yeah.
Boom. Hey, I wouldn't ask to have a match with Rey Fénix. My partner's out, but I still want a piece of you.
Yeah.
30-second backstage effective clip sets up the match for next week.
Yeah.
And we get a little backstory of why it's happening. To me, that's everything. It's everything about really good professional wrestling. Storylines and the flow is kind of setting these things up and giving us a reason for these things to happen. Other than I was just booked into a match. And it would set that table more to be in just really kind of to go along with the ride. It's once again something that WWE never does. They never give us a reason why KO is fighting Drew McIntyre. They just do it and say, well, you like these guys, so you're going to like them in a match. And that only goes so far.
Yeah.
It only goes so far. But the match was very good. I really liked the Dark Order bit that they did with the little vignette they put together.
That little commercial of sorts?
Yeah, it definitely had some Firefly Funhouse Bray Wyatt feel.
I felt like it seemed like a like one of those prescription medication commercials.
Oh, it definitely had that. I'm saying there was some absurdity to it.
Yeah.
There was definitely a world building kind of outside of our reality. There was the flashes of the mask on the guy as he's doing it. It was the culty kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because it had some absurdist things that we've seen in Bray Wyatt over the last several months. But I don't think it was so close to it that it was derivative. I thought it was its own kind of thing. It was what we need. If anyone's ever going to get this Dark Order over, you need some world building. You need some reason. We need some backstory. We need to understand what's going on. And I thought it was really well produced and effective. The video packages that AEW's been doing have been really, really well done.
Yeah, I would agree. The actual quality... Like, it's tough to actually touch WWE with some of that stuff by, like, video quality, I mean, and production quality. But, like, how the stuff makes sense is perfect. And really, the video quality is quite good. It's way better than anything that I feel like even just, like, kids out of, like, movie school or film school could do. Movie school, that's a thing. I've created
movie school.
It.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's quite good. But yeah, I think they have done a great job with those things. And this was a nice nice addition to the universe on trying to get us to understand more about what the Dark Order is all about.
Well, it's more setting up angles, and I think that's one thing that people have been a little bit, if they've had any complaints about AEW, is that they're a little bit wrestling heavy and not doing enough angles, and I think these are the kind of things that help us with that.
Yeah. What about the main event, Darby Allin and Moxley?
I thought it was good. It was especially good near the end when they kind of built to the finish. I really like Darby Allin. I think
he's so likable.
He is. He's the guy who doesn't need to win matches for you to get behind him. He's an underdog.
He's like the babyface version of Miz.
Yeah, well, he's an underdog that you're going to root for every time he goes out. He's got, without really being, I mean, his character is that he's half dead. He's not a rah-rah kind of guy necessarily, but he's definitely someone that people get behind. He sells like crazy. You can tell that there's passion in the way that he performs his job. So this is obviously perfect for Moxley to go over. And I the finish was good. Everything the body bag stuff. Yeah. Contrived, overdone, overbooked. I didn't care for that much, but everything that wasn't that I enjoyed.
Yeah. I especially like the beginning when he just dove on Moxley when he was coming to the ring. Like the camera framed that wonderfully, so you didn't see it coming from the television perspective. It just was like, whoa, what's going on? I love that it just immediately got me involved in this match that I already was looking forward to. And yeah, they kicked it up a gear towards the end. That finish was, that could have gone wrong in many different ways.
Yeah.
But they made that work. It looked devastating. And that was a match that Moxley should have won. And Darby Allin, I think, just comes out of that match looking even better than he did going in a loss. And that's the way good professional wrestling should be.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to point out in these things that I'm complaining about the ranking system and this, we're still getting a lot of clean, definitive finishes. And we saw Nick Jackson lose a match again. The Young Bucks do not win a lot of matches.
No.
We've got Omega, we've got the Young Bucks, we've got the Elite. They're losing a lot. And they're not screwy finishes. They're not interference. They're clean victories. Britt Baker lost again. Mm-hmm. This is a person that, by the way, she's a dentist. I don't know if you knew that, but this is a
it all makes sense.
That's the reason. So, but this is a person that they're very high on. We all know they're very high on, and she lost again. I think that's a really, really good thing. And I like the fact that we get definitive, that we don't just have that kind of both guys need to look strong. So we're going to book a screwy finish or an interference. And there's some of that here or there, but it's definitely not the norm. It's not everything's interference. Everything's 50-50 booked, however you want to put it. And when it talked about Britt Baker, I just can't help thinking that this is a perfect candidate to turn heel. I think there's definitely the crowd likes her. She gets a good pop when she comes in. They also chant, "She's a dentist," which I find hilarious. But I think she's a great candidate for a heel turn and to get pissed off and frustrated with her inability to win and to dominate, even though she's obviously one of the chosen people in the company. And I think it would give her some personality. I think it would give her an edge. And I think it's one of those things where if she turned heel, this could be one of those, oh, we have to hate her before we really love her. And it would give Riho someone to feud with and maybe even, you know, take the title off of her. So I think that would be a really, really good move for them and something that, hey, maybe they're even foreshadowing with having her have some struggles.
And that completely makes sense to me, except for the fact that their women's division is super heel heavy right now. I mean, you have Awesome Kong. You yeah. have Nyla Rose. You have B. Priestley, Jamie Hayter. You have Sheeta here, who is very heel. Riho is really the only babyface woman that has been built strongly, I feel like, outside of Britt. So taking Britt and moving her over to be heel just leaves that babyface side so vacant. Well, and I don't know if they can do that right now until they build up some other female babyfaces.
Well, and also, listen, the women's division is problematic in AEW. The storylines are really lacking.
Yeah.
They're getting no real promo time, no real build. There's been they've built it in the ring. They've had some good matches, but they have not really put a spotlight on it in the way that they have with any of the other divisions. And they have had no real secondary storylines. It's definitely been a point of concern, and they need to be a little bit better with that.
Yeah.
They need to give us some more meat on that bone going forward to make that division really stand out, because there's tons of talent there.
Yes. And they have the ability to do it. They don't have to go WWE route where every woman has a best friend who is always standing by them.
Yeah.
But they have the ability to add some story to this and reasoning for why these people are having issues, other than just like, this is the match that I'm supposed to be in. Anything else of note from Dynamite? I can't really think of anything.
Yeah, the only other thing that I noted when I was watching this is I really like the picture-in-picture when...
For the commercials?
Yeah, and when it's not a match. Even seeing Jericho interacting in the background with people, I find myself going, why aren't they showing? I want to know what he's saying.
Yeah.
But it really shows me that this show is
still
happening.
See, that bugs me too, for the same exact reason. I want to know what they're saying.
But the feeling I get is, oh, this show's still going on. There's the people that are watching the show are still seeing things happening. We're not taking a time out for television. We have to go to a commercial because that's part of how you pay the bills. It makes it feel like a real thing that is not as programmed. It's not as, oh, regimented. So now everyone kind of stop doing anything because we have to go to commercial. It seems much more organic. And my trust is that the stuff they're doing is maybe fun for the crowd and the crowd that's watching in live at the arena, and we just don't get a chance to be a part of it. But I'm okay with that. And I trust that anything that happens there that's important, they'll show me later on. So I like it. It makes it feel much more organic to me.
Yeah, I get that. Do we do predictions for Survivor Series?
I don't really care. I couldn't predict any of this stuff. You got every match has three people in it. If you want to, we can run down the card.
And it's an incomplete thing. Like I was saying, like the women's and the men's 5-on-5-on-5. We don't even have who are taking part in for Team NXT. I mean, I'm going to refresh right now. Nope, still no one. I looked at the results for NXT television this week. There's nothing about that. It's hard to. Like, why even bother making predictions for something when they can't even give us what the card is? Like, what was that? Was it Hell in a Cell that they gave us 2-3 matches announced, and that really fucking went over well?
Yeah, I mean, they've announced a bunch of stuff, but once again, everything is more than two people, and it's haphazardly booked. It's just not. As we're talking, I'm kind of scrolling through the Facebook feed and seeing some people come up that are talking about NXT versus AEW and saying how invested they are and this is going to be the best Survivor Series card. I just could not disagree more. I don't understand how any of these are going to be good matches. They have a lot of talent, but how are these good matches when there's literally nothing on the line? And the buildup has been so poor and so pointless. If you want to just go and see AJ Styles fight Shinsuke Nakamura and
Roderick
Strong, yeah, those are three great guys. But there's nothing, there's no reason for any of them to be in the same ring with one another.
No.
That's not good professional wrestling. I'm sorry. Just having guys go out that have talent and wrestle, that's not what I signed up for. That's not why I watch the shows.
No, it is this time of year all the time. We complain about it. Whatever. If you're into this, that's good. That's great for you. Just always skip our lead-ins to Survivor Series every year. It's just paint by numbers to me. There's nothing different that happens any year for Survivor Series. The build is exactly the same. The result is exactly the same. Whoever is the brand supremacy dominant team will get nothing. Nothing. So until that changes, fuck it.
Yeah, and listen, I'll tune back into Raw after Survivor Series. It will barely be mentioned, and I'll see what their reset's going to do and see where they go. Will I mute my TV when Bob Lash and Lana go on? Of course I will. Why would I subject myself to watching that? Will I tune back into SmackDown? I mean, I haven't watched a single episode since they put it on Fox because of Kane Velasquez and all the other stuff I didn't care about. So probably not. But, you know, I'm going to give it more of a chance because I no longer will be having to dodge a company-wide storyline that doesn't make any sense. And I'll try to get invested in these characters again. But I have a good wrestling product that I have some issues with, but I genuinely enjoy that I don't just play on my phone or do other things. And AEW scratches that itch. And I don't have to. And I'm also be thrilled that I can go back into watching NXT again, because I really enjoy that product. And this whole Survivor Series thing has ruined it for me. And I'll get a chance to watch that with fresh eyes again.
Yeah. All right, then. We're not going to do predictions then.
Great.
Perfect. The only other thing that I can think of is CM Punk said some things about WWE television that was very not flattering to WWE television, and that was refreshing to hear from a Punk fan and just a person who feels the same way for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, that's bananas, you know, him being involved in that and showing up on that show. Apparently the ratings were great for it. People are really psyched. Obviously CM Punk's a huge figure in the world of professional wrestling that so many people want to see come back. And the fact that he was on a WWE product and bad-mouthing the WWE, listen, I give him a lot of respect for letting that happen. And we've seen Corey Graves and other people badmouth certain storylines. It's true. I think it's good that they're letting them do that. I just wonder how long they'll let that happen.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, I think that about wraps us up here for this week. Thanks, everyone, once again for joining in and listening. We will be back here next week to talk about the pay-per-views and get us back on track to, I guess, wrestling that makes a bit more sense for WWE. We'll see. And talk more AEW, probably some NXT. In the meantime, make sure that you follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Spots. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. And listen to this podcast in one of many different wonderful fashions, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com. Also, simply MissSpots.com. We're also on all of the major streaming services, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, any of them that you can subscribe to the show and listen to it free of charge every Friday. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll see you next week. Good night. Good wrestling.